Hello. Today, this is October 25, and it's class 18, and we're continuing to talk about proximate cause. We started this last class. Proximate cause isn't always an issue. You come across it as an issue when there's something attenuated, something that goes beyond just an immediate, I'm driving the car negligently, I hit you, your leg breaks, boom, liability for that leg break. Anything that goes beyond this, you're likely to get into proximate cause questions. And all proximate cause then does is limit liability. Remember, cause and fact can go on to infinity. But proximate cause is a way that the courts use as a policy reason to draw a line around liability. It limits liability. So when we look at unusual either ways that things got done, types of injury, extent of injury, think about the negligence and what we would expect to happen from that negligence. And if you get anywhere beyond unexpected, and I talk about, you know, expect the unexpected, that's when there may be some proximate cause situations. And there are, we have, because it's a kind of a hybrid of a rule of law and a rule of fact, we have some very specific rules that you have to follow. And last class we talked about the rule of the eggshell skull plaintiff. All that means is you take your plaintiff as you find him. That's a rule. So that if you injure somebody and it causes, in a normal person, which has caused a little bit of bleeding, but you've hit a hemophiliac and they bleed to death, you're responsible for that death. Even though in an ordinary person, that wouldn't, caused a death. But for your injuries, you're negligent. But four, satisfied, and because the court, as a matter of policy, will make negligent defendants responsible for some very unforeseeable extent of injuries once there's a physical injury, we say you take your plaintiff as you find them, and you're responsible for the entire injury. So that was our Ben v. Thomas. But Fender Bender, what would we have expected? We'd have expected maybe a stiff neck or some bruises. We got a heart attack out of it. They're liable for the complete amount of the heart attack. Because we want to hold negligent defendants who liable for an entire injury when there's a totally innocent plaintiff, the law also allows for ultimate negligence down the line, so that negligent defendants are held liable for ultimate injuries where they've placed the innocent plaintiff in a risky position, even though those injuries add on or aggravate and are caused by negligence. We hold the original tortfeasor liable if those injuries are foreseeable. That is, if the ultimate negligence places them in a risky situation, and that risk is foreseeable or foreseeable risk. So we say, as a matter of law, that for rescuers are always foreseeable. The court doesn't want to have to, you know, get into any individual situations. We've got an innocent plaintiff and a negligent defendant. We're not going to draw a line around that defendant's negligence just because somebody else comes along and is negligent. They can also be liable, but under our rules of joint and several liability, our plaintiff doesn't have to go after all of these down the line negligent tortfeasors. So our original, as long as they are foreseeable, our original plaintiff original defendant will be considered responsible for everything. So rescuers are foreseeable, and negligent rescuers are foreseeable. Subsequent medical negligence is foreseeable. Anything that places when the defendant's original tortfeasor's negligence has placed the plaintiff in a risky situation, for that original tortfeasor is going to be reliable for all foreseeable risks. And as a matter of law, we've said that rescuers are foreseeable, negligent rescuers, negligent medical, all the things that we talked about in class. So why is that? We just don't want to put any more of a burden on the innocent plaintiff to go after all these individuals if under joint and several liability they can get the original tortfeasor. The original tortfeasor can then go after the other ones to cut for contribution or to bring them in as additional defendants, but it's not up to the innocent plaintiff. So these are just situations where there's an unexpected extent of harm and it's involved an impact upon the person. Remember, there was a slide that says this doesn't work where there's not an impact upon the person. You do the fender bender, your car is injured, you're carrying a Picasso, that's unforeseeable. And we're not going to, you know, if it's between an innocent injured party with a physical injury and an innocent person who just has other kinds of injuries, certainly injuries, not just economic loss, but these are physical property injuries, we're not going to go beyond. We have no maxims to say those are foreseeable, that we want to be responsible for even that kind of unforeseeability. Then we moved on to other ways to limit liability through proximate cause. And we talked about the two rules, the Polemus rule and the Wagon Man rule. Again, how you characterize what's unforeseeable or what's unexpected really determines what rule you're using. Here in Polemus and Wagon Man, we're talking about type of injury. In one, the rule in Polemus pretty much is very close to but-for causation. You're liable for everything that your negligence, that's a direct consequence of your negligence, except that an intervening superseding factor can cut the chain of causation. By that we mean that negligence, a negligent action that comes along afterwards, can cut that causal chain. Intervening, superseding factors. So everything that is a direct consequence cuts by intervening, superseding factor. As opposed to Wagon Man that says, look to the result. Is the result so unforeseeable from the original negligence that to hold somebody responsible for this very unforeseeable result would be just beyond the scope of the risk, beyond the risk that was created by the original negligence. As an example, go back to those original slides that I posted up about the car on the Wantagh Highway that hits a power pole, power surge, causes oil from a transformer that explodes to go light the path mark, and tractor trailers are burned, and houses are without power, and other houses are burned because of flames in the gas line. Under Polemus, our driver, our negligent driver, there's the test is any injury foreseeable from that negligent? Yeah, the power pole falling down. If any injury or damage is foreseeable, then they're liable for everything. Under Polemus, our negligent driver would be liable for everything. Pathmark, the tractor trailers, and the $500,000 in damages. Under Wagon Mound, we got to look to the result. What's the foreseeable result of somebody hitting a power a power line? That the line would go down, people would be out of power. Not, it would be unforeseeable. The result would be of the tractor trailers burning down. Could very easily go to the jury, who would say this is not the risk that was created by this injury. The type of risk is just too unforeseeable. So you can see that the Wagon Mound rule provides a more of a limitation than Polemus. Polemus is more wide open. Wagon Mound gives the jury, and remember, the jury makes these decisions, although what you have to decide is whether there's enough, you know, the judge has to decide whether there's enough evidence to go to the rule via foreseeability, but gives the jury a role in stopping it. Look to suit. We talked about a lot of these smaller cases, Venturicelli, Derridian. What are the difference between those two? Again, scope of the risk created by the negligent behavior. Is this risk created by the negligent behavior? Those two cases, compare and contrast those two cases. And then we get to subsequent criminal activity, the Doe v. Mannheimer case. And this case is a complicated one. It's a complicated one. All along we've said, you know, our elements, duty, breach, causation, proximate cause. What do you want to call, how do you want this case to be decided? Is it a duty case? Could have been, but the court didn't go that way. In Connecticut, they said, not an issue with duty here. I suggest in New York it would be very different. Remember this case when we get to Paul's class, next class. New York said, yes, there's going to be a duty. Why is there a duty? Because criminal activity was foreseeable. Remember Posakai. Posakai was a duty case. Criminal activity was foreseeable. We go on to but for. The court says, yeah, but for the negligence, that is, not trimming the plants, but for that negligence, there wouldn't have been the injury. So, yeah, cause and fact. Court says the limitation here is proximate cause. It has to be foreseeable. They use foreseeable of the exact type of harm, not just general, not just any criminal activity, but rape. Rape, it had to be foreseeable that rape would take place. And because it hadn't happened before, there had been a rape, but it had been inside. There had been plenty of other criminal activity in this situation, but it hadn't been this particular crime. So foreseeability comes again, only it comes as a limitation factor as the proximate cause area, not at the duty area. Proximate cause, not at duty. Why is this important? Because when it comes to proximate cause, our defendant is still negligent. It's negligence versus no negligence. And our defendant is still negligent. Another case comes along, we already have a negligent defendant. Limitations still under Posakai in this case, Doe, no liability, but it comes along at a different point in the inquiry. So And then, of course, look at Heinz v. Morrow. We didn't talk about it, but I want you to look at it to see how different it makes it when you're talking about how something comes about, the manner that something comes about, as opposed to the end result. Some very unforeseeable manners as opposed to what actually happened. Heinz v. Morrow, there was mud, somebody was trying to get his out of the mud, they hitch their leg gets tangled in the rope, they get dragged into the mud and the leg gets broken. Very intricate way the injury came about, as opposed to just saying because of defendant's negligent mud, the leg was broken. Again, the injury is the same, but if we say it's unforeseeable, if we want to break the causal chain about unforeseeable way it came about, that makes a big difference. So how specific you get, how you tell your story, makes it very important to whether something seems foreseeable or unforeseeable. So I'm always saying, tell the story. What's the story here? How did this come about? Proximate cause is very story dependent. All right, so next class we're going to start with Paul's graph. Please do read the Kinsman cases, though, because we're going to do those also. And I fully expect that we will start with defenses. So please look at the explanation of the statutes, comparative negligence statutes, and know the difference between pure comparative negligence and modified comparative negligence. The difference between pure and modified comparative negligence, it depends on the statutes. So read the statutes carefully.